F4.
Number 10A.
We come now to the last subject of the first part, love. It's a short part. Our epitome reads, through spiritual sense, Christ's working leads to its universal acceptance. That's the main point in that part B, that love wants that everything and everybody, the whole universe, accepts the Christ idea. So it shows that Jesus had within his consciousness a principled consciousness that was attracting everybody that was ready for this idea to attract it to him. It says here, 23, many believed. So you see again, many believed. It says accepted, it was accepted by many, it gives a universal sense. Many believed in his name. When we read always in his name, which is a rendering that appears in the Bible quite often, it means when we believed in the Christ and in that his name. So many believed in his name when they saw the miracles, that is the signs which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them. He acted quite different than we usually do. If we draw people to our classes, then we are very happy and then we feel, oh, well, that's fine. But he did just the other way around. He did not commit himself to them. We feel we should commit ourselves to the student, and I think we do in a certain way. But Jesus said he didn't commit himself to them. Because he knew all men. Because he knew all men. And here we get that sense that he didn't want to have a people universe. That he didn't believe in a people universe. That didn't mean anything to him. To him only the universe of idea was of great value. And so he didn't commit themselves because he knew all men. And needed not that any should testify of men. For he knew what was in men. So we can see that here at the point of love, he began to see the universality of the idea man versus the personal sense of men and of people. So he didn't commit himself to them. So he didn't, so to say, trust in a wrong sense. You know, Mrs. Eddy uses those two terms, trustfulness and trustworthiness. So Jesus wasn't trustful to people. He only felt trustworthy what came from the Father, what made him do the signs. And so he didn't trust people. And this is not running down people, but it's just showing that this very difficult point, which I always feel is difficult to convey because it hurts people, that to say we are not engaged in a people universe. We are engaged in an idea universe. But people would like to be people. Everybody feels that way. And we need that scourge to really wipe out this belief that we are people and that we have to build up a people universe and have to love a people universe and have to save a people universe, always people, 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 people. You see, but we have seen that the mortal people are only the link between the ape and what is called the real man. In the days of creation, we have no people. In the days of creation, God never made people. In the days of creation, in the 6 days of creation, God made man in his image and likeness by being conscious of himself. That was then called man. God's consciousness of himself, that is man. And that has nothing to do with people. That has to do with God. God being conscious of himself. He made man in his image. That which God has as an image in his mind, that which the divine mind beholds, and the divine mind beholds only ideas, because ideas are the immediate image of mind. So Jesus, right from the start, could see that he hadn't to rely on people, but that he had to rely on his Father, on his principle. And this naturally is a very hard lesson for all of us to learn, because we belong to the people universe, we are people, so to say, and we have to get rid of it. We have to get rid of ourselves. And I think there is no better way shown in the Bible than here in that first part in John, how he showed how right from the beginning of mind we can see that we are not born of woman and of the Father, now parents, but that we are born of the divine mind. So that if we stick to that point and reason constantly without deviating, we never arrive at that concept of people. Man is the idea of God. So this ends that first part. Now, it's a simple part because we can see it is built up in the world order. And that's the main backbone of that first part, that it leads us really out, away from John the Baptist, away from the days of creation, leads us away to the Christ, to the Christ idea, so away from the days of creation to the numerals of infinity, and finally we see that behind everything was the world order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love at work. That the divine infinite calculus was first bringing forth and bringing into our consciousness the fact that life and soul show that being is identified spiritually and that this is the Christ idea within us. So we can leave that part. Oh yeah, now let's also see again what is A and what is B. Now perhaps when we have seen those seven different sceneries, we can much clearer see that the first three have are, so to say, one block, and that the last four, principle, life, truth, and love, is a different block. The first block is really dominated by truth in absolute Christian Science. And that truth in absolute Christian Science is what? We have seen that truth in absolute Christian Science is the consciousness of truth, where truth has always been conscious of itself. That is the tone of truth there. So that when truth is conscious of itself, when it is translated to the candlestick order, to the science order, down to the point of understanding, that consciousness of truth translates itself as that which reveals that truth to mankind, to us. So it comes to us as a revelation. That's why we had in the epitome in here that truth reveals. Do you have the epitome? I don't have it right before me, but I can find it somehow. Yes. It said, in science as the word truth reveals. See, truth reveals. That's the tone of truth in absolute Christian Science. And reveals what? Reveals really being, life, being, and identifies that being as our Christ consciousness, as our Christ idea. But that Christ idea which we entertain is incorporeal. So in order to show that incorporeality, he takes mind, spirit, soul, those first three tones, and shows it is from the incorporeal mind. It doesn't come from the corporeal woman and father. It comes from the incorporeal mind. It is showing in the tone of spirit that the whole nature that we gain from God is spiritual, it's of grace and truth. And we have it in the fullness of it. As the only begotten Son, there is only one begotten Son in the bosom of the Father. So it's absolutely incorporeal because the Father is incorporeal. And then in the point of soul, we get again that sense that incorporeal Christ idea is a divine calculus of word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Therefore, it is incorporeal because those four sides of the Holy City are spiritual. They are spirit. It's a spiritual calculus and not a corporeal calculus. It's not a corporeal city that came down from heaven. And so it gives the sense that truth reveals to us the incorporeal man consciousness as a Christ idea. Then you have a complete change once it is established and John the Baptist gives way to Jesus and says, here Jesus is coming, and Jesus begins to speak, to teach. From that point on, you can see that it begins to operate as the divine principle that attracts all those ideas that are necessary later on for Jesus' mission. Then it operates and demonstrates itself as life, namely turning water into wine, so that we are no more thinking in terms of good thoughts, but in inspirational ideas, wine. That divine principle operates then as truth. It wipes the temple from all uncleanliness. It wipes the temple from being misused by material mind, and so wipes out the money changers. And then it operates as love, where it attracts everybody and accepts, and everybody accepts, or many accepted him, many believed on him. But he didn't believe in people. He knew what was in the minds of men, and so he didn't trust that. So he maintained, so to say, his purity by saying, I'm not a corporeal man, therefore I'm not going to believe in corporeal men. See, the very beginning was that we are not born corporeally, but of the divine father, mother, and so he didn't believe that he was corporeal, so he was allowed not to believe in corporeality, in people. Yeah. That's the tone of the very first part. At the moment, and now we go on and come to the second part. The second part is in the candlestick order, naturally signs as the Christ. Signs as the Christ. And our epitome for that signs as the Christ, which depicts truth and spirit, I have summarized it in the epitome in the signs as the Christ ideal, that's truth, reflects itself, that spirit, it's a reflection of the Christ ideal as an infinite, divine infinite calculus of spirit, truth and spirit. So we have the calculus of truth and spirit, which is now shown in its scientific nature. And this is quite a big subject and a wonderful subject. And before we go into the text, perhaps you take page 27. That's the summary of the second part. So that before going into details, we just want to have an overall view of that second part. And that is summarized on page 27. So we can see that now he is going to explain that he who has been defined by John the Baptist as a calculus of ideas, that now he is going to show how that calculus of idea is working. You see, you remember, can I go back to the first part there at the point of soul, in the third subject of soul? John the Baptist has depicted the Christ idea in a fourfold way, therefore as a calculus. But naturally, he hasn't shown how that calculus works, what it does. So he takes now this calculus and devotes the second part to showing in more in detail how the divine infinite calculus is working. And he shows that first through A and then through B. Now, if we deal with that divine infinite calculus, let me first perhaps show how Mrs. Eddy was showing the very same development in her works. For instance, in her message to the Mother Church in 1901, she has the following paragraph, and I read it slowly, and you see at once that she depicts the same way that we are going, namely the way from the days of creation, from the first part to the second part. She says, I begin, again she begins somewhere, I begin at the feet of Christ and with the numeration table of Christian Science. So she begins with the numeration table. 1 by 1, 1 by 2, 1 by 3, 1 by 4, 2 by 1, 2 by 2, 2 by 3, 2 by 4, and so on. She begins with the numerals of infinity, with the numeration table of Christian Science. But I do not say that 1 added to 1 is 3, or 1.5. I adhere to my text. And you see again that she says, stick to your category, stick to your numeration table, don't deviate from it, don't try to calculate differently than what is laid out in the science of arithmetic, stick to it. I adhere to my text. Naturally, she speaks now spiritually of her calculus, that 1 and 1 are 2 all the way up, all the way up. Up to what? Up to the infinite calculus of the infinite God. So you see again that she too was saying the way leads from the numerals of infinity and to the calculus of infinity. First you must learn your digits before you can calculate. Naturally, usually the student would like first to calculate and walk on the water, and then perhaps he says, well, perhaps I should learn first the numeration table, should first learn the fundamentals of it, because somehow he can't walk on the water, and so he begins to realize that he starts at the wrong end. So the numeration table of Christian Science, its divine principles and rules, are before the people. She says, I have given them. You can't say, I haven't given them, I've given it in the textbook, it's before the people, we just have to take it. But start with the beginning, with the numeration table, but she shows that it leads to the infinite calculus. And this is, and also we must see that this infinite calculus is an infinite divine calculus, meaning that it shows itself in infinite ways, that it is very individual. And we will see in the text how we come to many, many individual presentation of that infinite calculus, that it's not always the same. Therefore, I want to read also from Miscellaneous Writings 104, where she says, in science, all being is individual. All being is individual. So also the Christ calculus is individual. For individuality is endless in the calculus of form and numbers. So it's endless in calculus. So again she shows, don't think that there is just one presentation of the calculus. There is just one calculus as a principle. But that calculus is constantly restructuring the fundamentals and restructuring them so that we get every time a completely different picture. And this is what we have to see, because from now on we will see all the various pictures, all the various variation of that one calculus of 4 by 4. that four is constantly being presented in individual ways and chastened being. And that's naturally the beauty of it, because that makes infinity really infinite. Or it would be just be routine, it would just be what you call always the same. Huh? Sorry that I don't get the right English term. All right, now, having seen this, we want to see what this divine calculus is showing us. So it's not enough to say we are a calculus, we are the city, but we also have to see what constitutes that city. So the inner value of it and the inner operation of it. And therefore, I like first to take page 27, where we have a survey of what we will be talking about. Here we have A, from the standpoint of truth in Absolute Christian Science, and the title is, In Science as the Christ, Truth Manifests the Christ Ideal as the Divine Infinite Calculus of Spirit. Can you see that truth here has a different office than in the first part? Can you still remember that we said in the first part, truth from Absolute Christian Science has the office of revealing to us really the Word of Life, revealing. Now here it is not revealing, here it is showing that this calculus is actually working, and is actually working very hard, and therefore is impelling the manifestation of that Christ ideal, so that we get a sense of how the calculus works. We have to know that. Now, how does that calculus work? So we go to the next category. And see, the next category is indented 1, 2, 3, 4. Are you with me? Therefore, it shows that overall caption, which I read, that truth impels, so to say, the manifestation of the Christ, that John is now showing how he's going to do that. So he shows it from four different angles, namely from the 1, 2, 3, 4. So, what are those four Christ angles, Christ aspects? Huh? They are first of Christ as the Word. So you combine the Christ as the Word. Then second, Christ as Christ. Then you come to the next, to Christ as Christianity. And then to Christ as Science. Isn't that a very clear order? John takes the Christ manifestation, says, how does Christ manifest itself? And he says it manifests itself first as the Word, then as the Christ, then as Christianity, and then as Science. But it's always the Christ. So we get shades of meanings of the Christ. Now, we take the epitome to it, so as to see now much more in a concrete way what it means. So when he is presenting the Christ, he presents it on the one, first as the Christ, as the Word, meaning that he shows that the Christ has within itself the power to develop from the Word to the Christ. A terrific, important thing for us, because we want to get out of the Word sense, and we all want to get out of the letter sense, and we want to get the Christ sense of Christian Science, we want to get the Spirit sense of Christian Science, and so we have to see that we must make a step from the Word to the Christ. And if we feel, well, we must make that step, then we are wrong, because don't trust people, don't trust ourselves, don't never trust the I, the personal I, nor we. He wants to show that the Christ does it. That the Christ, as the Word says, I am going to show you how the Christ leads you out of the Word into the Christ sense. Isn't that terrific that we find here a rule, a method, which shows that the Christ is doing that if we submit to that Christ. So we get first the development from the Word to the Christ. Then we go in that same category down to the two, Christ as Christ, and see that he is showing here that the Christ now translates itself to the human. So that it is the Savior. Only if it translates itself to the human, the Christ is the Savior. We know the Christ as the Savior. So can you hear? This is the second step that we experience. What happens when the Christ translates itself to the human and begins to save what needs to be saved so that there is nothing left anymore to be saved? What then is the situation? Well, then we have Christianity, namely that everything that is in agreement, is coinciding with God. So you have Christ as Christianity, where we see how he shows that the Christ illustrates the spiritual coincidence of God and man in his image. So it's no more saving, the saving is over, Christ as Christ has saved what needs to be saved. So what is the situation so that God and man coincide in nature? So that man and God have the same nature, that they are coinciding. You know very well that Mrs. Eddy defines the Christ that way, that she says in the platform that the Christ illustrates the coincidence of God and man in his image and likeness. That man illustrates the spiritual agreement between God and man. This is what is shown here. See? So that is the outcome of the Christ translation. The outcome is always Christianity. So he shows here the Christ as Christianity as a spiritual coincidence of God and man. And fourth, Christ as science shows that the Christ is a fourfold witness of God. This is perhaps a bit more difficult, right, to understand, but when we come to it, the illustration then shows it a bit clearer, and it just shows that the end of all of the Christ translation is not only to show that God and man coincide, but also to show that that is a fourfold witness that has always been foretold in the Scriptures. That he fulfills the Christ prophecy. Yeah.